Constitution Hill is galloping towards the flat. British Racing's governance paralysis has no end in sight, and a major integrity case raises big questions for Irish racing. All that and more on today's Front Page. Hello and welcome to the Front Page. On today's show, we'll be looking at the biggest decision of Nicky Henderson's career. We'll be examining the Philip Burns case, and we'll be looking back at a busy weekend of action. For all of that, I'm delighted to be joined by Lewis Porteous and Liam Head. Welcome both. Let's dive straight in. We're going to get started with the weekend. We had a big card at Newbury and some interesting Cheltenham implications to draw out of it. Let's start with Haiti Couleurs, Lewis. Pretty convincing in the Denman Chase, albeit some sticky jumping. What do we think of it?
I was quite impressed. As far as preps go, I thought the team would be very happy with that. Like you alluded to, his jumping wasn't best, but we've got to remember how much rain they had up there. It was a sticky, horrible ground. And what I really liked about him is when he was challenging the straight, there was another gear there, and he went away from a good yardstick in long press quite easily. Still unchanged around 10-1 for the Gold Cup in open year. I think that probably represents a little bit of value, to be honest. I think his rivals would rather he wasn't there. I think if you look at Factor File, Gaelic Warrior, Grey Dawning, the one question mark over those three is the high class, but will they get a really truly run 3.25 miles? And that's one thing with Hayter, you know he will. He'll go out and make it a proper test. And there may be one that's too quick for him in the final stages, but I think he will get a lot of those horses under pressure at Cheltenham.
Actually, no bigger than 9-1 now, Hayter Couleurs. Liam, any value left in that?
There is, because as Lewis said, it's such a wide open Gold Cup market this year. You know, you can make a case for, you know, 5, 6, 7 of them that are, you know, on course for the race. I thought he was a really impressive winner at Newbury on Saturday. And you can really sense when a horse has been sort of prepared for a Gold Cup campaign and you get to this stage, having done all the prep work and come through, you know, pretty unscathed. Obviously, there's that minor blip at Haydock. But, you know, he's won with authority in three of his starts. Obviously, won the Welsh Nationals. So we know he's got that stamina for this test. And I think he can you know, put up a bold performance in the Gold Cup. And it just gives the race another narrative, really, as well. There's so many different angles, great angles for the sport. So it's exciting for the yard of Rebecca Curtis.
Certainly is. Libby Walsh suggested maybe cheek pieces. Any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if it keeps him to sort of keeps the job in focus, you know, and someone like Ruby's got a great knowledge of the sport, if I'm sure everything will be a possibility at this stage. I think it's just great that he's been given a clear round and has come through unscathed to give the yard a fighting chance in the race.
We're looking at a wide open Gold Cup. Some of the other races at Cheltenham are now starting to become a little bit more one-sided, one of which is the Arkle. Lulamba, 3 from 3 over fences. Lewis, now 6-4 for the Arkle. A banker?
I think he is, Tom, to be honest. I was impressed again. This horse has just got something a little bit different about him. Looks a little bit special, both at Sandown last time and Newbury. There's a point in the race where you're thinking, is he going anywhere here? And very quickly, he can latch on to the leaders and make up a lot of ground in a short space of time. I like how strong he is at the line. I've no doubt he's going to be better over further, but a stay-in 2-miler at this stage is what usually wins the Arkle. And I think he's getting a bit of experience now, whereas his main market rival, Copec de Bourdes, has only had that one run over fences. I think that's a worry. I think you're getting into sort of Martin Pike territory when you're trying to win an Arkle off one run, which he did with World Chief, who came off a Egg and Spoon race at Taunton to win it. It's a tricky thing to do, and I do like the stamina angle to Lamba, which I think actually wins an Arkle when they stay on strongly up the hill.
Also, there's a big question of what the ground is going to be like at Cheltenham, because while we are 4 weeks out from the festival, we've had about 6 weeks of rain so far in the United Kingdom. I saw a newspaper report the weekend that had been rain every single day this year somewhere in the country. The next couple of weeks look pretty wet as well. So we're potentially looking at the point that the promised spring ground might not materialise at Cheltenham.
That's just been relentless, hasn't it? I mean, all I would say is a lot does factor on what happens that week before. It is a well good draining course. It's, talking of drains, let's hope that's all been fixed and sorted out. I wonder if that heavy rain is a worry to them at all. But I think trying to decide what the ground's going to be in the middle of March, it's still tricky because it does actually drain really well, and a dry week into it will change everything. Mm. But it's another thing to factor in with your anti-post punting.
Yeah. Sober Glory, perhaps other talking point from the weekend, 16-1 for the Supreme. Were you impressed, Liam?
I was, yeah. And I think, you know, he looks, he's got so much, he's already improved quite a lot in his few runs this season. Obviously, he had a minor blip at Sandown. But they've quickly rectified that. I mean, Philip Hobbs was talking after he won on Saturday that, you know, nothing came up from that performance at Sandown, but he's quickly got back to the form that we've seen from him, the very best form, and you know, from a yard that it seemed to have a good few upcoming youngsters in the team. So I think you have to be impressed with what he did on Saturday, and you know, if Rhodes lead to the Supreme, then you'd have to give him a fighting chance as well.
Any other takeaways from the weekend, Liam?
Yeah, I was really impressed with Tutti Conti, who won the William Hill Hurdle for Paul Nicholls. Off at, you know, 12 stone, it's quite hard to win a race of that calibre with that weight on your back. But this horse, again, has really thrived over his last few runs. And what was quite interesting after the race was that Nicholls was saying that they could supplement him or think about supplementing for the Champion Hurdle, which, of course, we know is another wide open race this year. I think they would want proper testing ground. I mean, Saturday was probably as testing as you could probably get at Newbury. But the way he quickened up, I mean, he won with so much in hand. I mean, if they were really to go down that route, you'd have to give him a serious chance on, you know, if the ground does come up soft or even heavy at Cheltenham. So, yeah, hard not to like from his performance.
Just a little add on that. Did you see Sober Glory was 4 seconds faster, carrying 2 pounds less? So going back to Sober Glory, that is, I think it's got to be a player in the Supreme.
Mm, that's a good start, that. Let's turn also to last week. We had the first Friday Night Live, took place at Newcastle. Lewis, I think you and I have sadly aged out the target demographic, but Liam's a bit closer to it. What do you think about it? Is it a gimmick? Is it just a night out, or is it a genuine pathway into the sport for new followers?
Well, I appreciate that first comment, Tommy. Having turned 30 the other week, I think I might just be slowly missing out. But listen, you know, the sport are trying their best to incorporate new fans into what we want. You know, the future is the younger generation. And listen, it's having seen a bit of the action on Friday, it won't be everyone's cup of tea, I think, but it's not designed to be for the purists, for the hardcore racing fans. What it is, it's designed to sort of introduce new people to the sport. I've seen some of the videos that our production team did and social media team did over the course of the evening got on Friday. And there seemed to be a really good atmosphere there at Newcastle, you know, albeit considering it was pretty horrible weather as well. But I think it's going out to a new audience, and that can only be a positive thing for the sport going forwards, I guess.
Yeah, we've got a clip of Tom Marquand being serenaded by his fan club, which we'll, I'm told we're going to plug in now.
That was good, Tom, yeah?
Yeah.
Something else?
Been there football for the races,
actually. You here for it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Why not?
No, it's nice. Good. Good luck.
Well, look, there we go. That's certainly not your average sight you're going to see on race courses. But look, it's fantastic to see that. And racing needs to connect with younger generations. And expecting them to engage with exactly the same thing that we provide to all other age cohorts. I think it's just naive, isn't it, Lewis?
I've got absolutely zero issue with this. And whose toes is it stepping on? Introducing it on a Friday night, these fixtures are usually sparsely attended. Why not try something different? And to be honest, everybody wins, because if they put on a good racing product as well, then punters at home, surely it's good for them and it's good for getting a new demographic. We've got to remember that for years we've been worried about an ageing demographic in this sport. This is one way of trying to attract them. A new generation, and yeah, good luck to them for giving something different a go.
Yeah, and apparently betting turnover was up 60% on the racing league average, which I think is what it's replaced, basically. So evidence that the competitive racing was also drawing an audience. So all in all, pretty positive. We will come back to Friday Night Live later, because the next one is going to be featuring Constitution Hill, no less. But before we do that, let's turn to the Philip Burns case, because this is one of the biggest stories last week. Philip Burns was cleared by an IHRB, the Irish Regulators Referrals Committee, on charges of deliberately jumping off a horse at Wexford last May. The committee ruled his exit was poor horsemanship rather than intent. But I think it's fair to say the case has raised some questions about investigative standards after it emerged that IHRB declined assistance from the BHA. So at the hearing, the panel determined the case was not made, and they were particularly scathing of the betting evidence provided, which they said was unsatisfactory and unconvincing. There was also missed opportunities to gain information and intelligence about the case, because the stewards on the day did not interview Philip Burns after he was unseated after the last. The following day, an investigation was called after social media sort of furore, and there was a big drift as well on the horse. So it now emerged that the BHA, which at the time was the IHRB's integrity partner, raised concerns repeatedly about the race, including flagging unusual betting patterns, and encouraged the stewards on the day to seek an explanation from the rider. So the IHRB effectively declined BHA assistance during the investigation. Is that defensible, Lewis?
It's hard to defend, Tom. Like you say, it goes sends back to the day when a horse goes from 6-4 to 13-2. The stewards have surely got to be watching that that horse like a hawk, and to not even have the rider in, or could they even have asked questions beforehand? Like, this is on our radar. What are the riding instructions? They've asked no questions before. It comes to light then that the BHA were in contact with them on the day and said you need to be asking, you need to have the jockey in, you need to at least interview, you need to ask questions. And the report from the stewards were they looked at it between themselves and then decided there was no further action to be taken.
It's extraordinary. How could they come to that conclusion? And we have asked the IHRB that very question, and they gave a very sort of bland statement in response, not really engaging with the question itself. Just how on earth can they sit in a room and come to that conclusion?
And from that from that point onwards, they're behind the black ball.
Yeah.
Because they've got, if anything going to be evidence is going to be said that you're going to use down the line, it's going to be there in the heat of the moment after the race. But that was from there, it's kind of unravelled, hasn't it? And then it sounds like on the day of the inquiry, the information they sort of presented in terms of betting just didn't cut the mustard. There was no paper trail. There was nothing to connect the two. And you've got to remember that this was an independent panel of the IHRB, and they simply said, look, the evidence isn't there that we can make any move on this.
And our Ireland editor, Richard Forrester, very much echoed that, basically saying, whatever you think about what happened at Wexford, whatever you think about the video evidence, the fact was the case was just not proven. And the IHRB have insisted that their investigation was rigorous. But declining outside expertise doesn't suggest openness. And the referrals committee was pretty scathing in its judgment. Does this damage confidence in Irish racing's regulatory standards and the fairness of the sport more generally?
Well, it's got to damage confidence in the IHRB. Of course it has. They've got to present a robust case if they're going to take it to an inquiry, and they haven't done that. From the outside looking in, it feels like they've gone through this process because of the pressure, outside pressure, without maybe fully having any conviction themselves that there's a case to answer to, and it's just they just leave a sour taste, to be honest.
And Liam, as a punter, you know, this cuts to the core of your perception of the sport, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there would have been a lot of people that would have been sort of involved from a betting point of view in that race. And, you know, a lot of disgruntled punters on how the race unfolded. I think just going back to it on as a whole, you know, why if there was any concern before the race, during the race or after the race, you have to be confident enough to be able to challenge the connections of what's happened. It just sounds like they've called this investigation because of the backlash that we've seen on social media, you know, obviously because there would have been a lot of interest in the race itself. So it does bring in an element of sort of doubt for the IHRB now, just of how they've managed to handle these things. And from a just longevity of how long it took to get to the position that we got to last week, that it took that long to have an outcome which you know, there wasn't enough evidence in there to be a case in the first place.
The grey area, though, is when did the committee tell the IHRB of their decision? I mean, was it just a day before the announcement or not? I feel like, have the IHRB even been sitting on this, on the verdict? I mean, that's complete speculation, but I just feel, like Liam said, it's such a long time from December to then announcing a verdict in February.
Yeah, I agree, and we'll keep asking the questions of the IHRB, seeking answers about the way they've handled this case. But let's move from one regulator to another, the BHA. And last week, interim BHA chief executive Brant Dunche spoke of his frustration and uncertainty as he admitted there was no end in sight to British Racing's governance standoff. And of course, for those who haven't been following the story closely, this relates to the reforms introduced by new chair Lord Charles Allen, which are currently being resisted, perplexingly, but for different reasons, by both racecourses and horsemen. Meanwhile, we also have projections that there could be 5-10% fewer runners by 2027 from 2024, and it's not just deadlock in the boardroom, because the Racing Digital project to modernise the administration of racing has descended into what can only be described as chaos, as Chair Chris Batterham departed amid grave concerns the project will fail, and suggestions reported by the Racing Post yesterday that the budget is set to spiral to £20 million. There's a fair bit to pick out of that, but let's start with the governance standoff. No end in sight, says interim chief executive Brant Dunche. I mean, at what point does this paralysis just become completely unacceptable for the sport to stomach?
Well, we're in a state of flux right now. Nothing can be made. We are no closer now to an independent BHA board and governance reform than when Lord Allen came into his position.
And that was belatedly. in September, after a long delay. Yeah,
exactly. And all the time, no progress can be made. The thing that annoys me is that it seemed that all shareholders at the time agreed that we needed governance reform. An independent board was a positive step. Yet, not only are racecourses not happy, but horsemen have also got involved in the situation about the data rights and such things like that. And like I say, the whole sport suffers while there's no progress. And it's all well and good Brant saying that he was frustrated, but the bottom line of that piece in our paper was that he could see no end. It doesn't look like this is going to be solved anytime soon. And it's we've really got to make progress here. And the last thing we want is Lord Allen walking away, because that will tarnish that role, and you will not find a replacement. And then where do we go? So we've got to really be careful what we wish for here.
And in the meantime, you know, there are really practical consequences of this, because while the sport is squabbling about reforms which were previously agreed, it's unable to move forward with important initiatives like building out a long-term strategy, or even more pressing things like the fixture list. So we will have over the next few months decisions to make, difficult decisions about the fixture list. Brant Dunche and his executive team flagged this 5-10% decline in available runners. from 2024 to 2027, which is a really worrying stat in itself. But that also strongly indicates the necessity of some contraction of the fixture list to preserve the competitiveness. But as it stands, we might not be able to see that happen because the board cannot even agree on the next steps around its makeup.
Yeah, it's sort of like a domino effect, really, isn't it? Because we've got to get everything put in place correctly now in order to save the future of the sport going forward. And I think it comes down to when you're talking about, you know, the fixture list, which has been an issue for a while now in terms of there's too much racing. It's almost a case of like less is more at this stage, because you need to protect the future and ensure that we're not getting to a stage where we're losing races because there's not enough runners.
Racing digital, I mean, a huge cost overrun. We reported, I think late last year, that cost had spiraled to $6 million. It now turns out that the total budget for the project is in fact twice that. And that is not expected to deliver until 2027. And if the costs continue at the current run rate, that would mean an increase in the spend to a total of $20 million, spread between the BHA and Weatherby's. Now, the BHA has just increased their fees by 4%, more than the rate of inflation, paid by racecourses, paid by owners. I mean, this is what governance failure looks like in practice.
Absolutely. I mean, £20 million. What could that do for other parts of the sport? Mm. I mean, it's just a colossal amount that we're getting to here, and it just feels like it doesn't rain but it pours at BHA Towers. This is something that was revealed in 2021 to be completed in 2024, yeah. And now they're saying that there's not going to be anything till 2027. And I tell you what, if it isn't all singing, all dancing, and absolutely perfect from the word go, it's going to get absolutely...
Does anyone think it's actually going to be 2027? Well, I mean, this is racing's HS2.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's just delay after delay after delay. Yeah. It's just a bad look. And then we had the open letter in the Racing Post from Chris Baterham last week, which was really sort of... It got a tit for tat in the end, didn't it? The BHA coming back saying this is, he's sort of jumping before he was pushed and all sorts. And it's just a real, real bad look for the sport, and there's no end in sight.
Well, let's move on to something which is a bit more interesting to talk about, because it's action that's going to take place on the track rather than off the track. And it's perhaps one of the most talked about races before Cheltenham, which is Constitution Hill making... an appearance on the flat at Southall in a couple of weeks' time. Ocean Murphy is going to be in the saddle. Liam, you were there to see Constitution Hill practice coming out the gates. What did you think of it?
Listen, I mean, it's like the first day of school for him almost. I mean, I seen a clip on, I think it was a Paddy Power podcast, and someone referred to the video and said that they'd seen people falling out of a pub quicker than with the way Constitution Hill come out of the stalls. But I mean, listen, there was probably only the second time I think that he's ever been in a stalls, so you're not going to expect him to come flying out the gates, particularly when it was down at Charlie Hill's yard and it was probably about 100 metres to the wall. So if you want him to come out any quicker, he's going through the wall. Yeah. So I think you've got to sort of take that with a pinch of salt, really. I mean, he's obviously since had a bit more practice with O'Shea Murphy on his back. They've come out of the stalls at Seven Barrows and he's rode him in a gallop along with an ex-flat horse. So they're obviously fine-tuning to ensure that he's one of the quick ones that do come out. But we have to remember that this is a mile and a half race. So even if he comes out to walk one of the last in the stalls, he's going to pick up ground and obviously, it's not what we would have thought we'd see him in his next race, but it's exciting nonetheless.
It certainly is. The big story, of course, though, is not how he performs on the flat. It's whether Nicky Henderson opts to run him in the champion hurdle at Cheltenham. Lee Modestead wrote a column today calling it the biggest decision of Nicky Henderson's career. He also referenced Alice Plunkett's comments recently on ITV, where she said she was praying that Constitution Hill didn't turn up at Cheltenham. Should we share that prayer?
There is a lot of people that will be in the same boat as that because of the fact that we've seen him fall three times in his last four starts, and heavy falls as well. And there is an element of thinking, well, if it happens again, will we see him get back to his feet? So, listen, there's a lot of... It is, as Lee alluded to, it is a huge decision, and probably, arguably, the biggest decision that Nicky Henderson will have to make of his training career. You know, he's got to put as he always does. He's got to put the best interest of the horse first. But ultimately, he's putting his reputation on the line here, because he will know more than anyone that if Constantine Hill lines up in the Champion Hurdle and something goes wrong, he will be the first one to get flack from the public. So I can understand the comments made by Alice, and there'll be a lot of other people that share that comment. Ben Pauling was on Look on Sunday yesterday, and he was saying if it was up to him, he'd run the horse because of the talent that we've seen him. But I suppose that is easier said than done when you don't actually train the horse and you don't have the responsibility. So, it's a decision. It's a big decision that they have to make. I'm sure Michael Buckley will be involved in it as well, the owner. It's one that we'll have to ponder and think of soon, shortly after Southall.
Well, let me put you on the spot, though, Liam, and I'm going to put you on the spot as well, Lewis. Constantine Hill runs well at Southall. He schools well. Do you run him?
Yes, because if he's showing the right signs that he's in form and he gets a good confidence boost in the race at Southall. I know it's completely different to what he'll face at Cheltenham. Then I think you've got to, just because of, in terms of, I think if he stays up, and obviously it's a big if, then he's the one to beat based on what we've seen. He's a past winner of the race. He's got the speed. You know, we've seen him do it before on the big stage, and you know he's had this extra training with Yogi Breisner now. So I think, if Connections weren't thinking about a possible crack at the Champion Hurdle, they wouldn't even entertain any interest of bringing Yogi in to see if they can do something about this. So, I think if all goes well with Southall, just because Nicky Henderson won't have anything else in the race, or you'd like to think he wouldn't. I mean, he joked around about entering Lou Lambert into the race. He obviously won't do that, but I think if everything falls right, I think you've got to have a crack.
So it's a yes from our man in Lambourne. What do you think, Lewis?
I find it hard to see him running off without a clear ride over hurdles under his belt, to be honest. I think I'd have liked to have seen him in like a Kingwell or somewhere this coming weekend, just to get a clear round and then you can go into it. I think they may be looking for a good run on the flat to then say, oh yes, we can explore that route in the summer with him and take that attitude. I think the goalposts changed when Sugino got injured, because I think now Nicky's got no runner in the race and he's thinking, well, maybe we leave. He's definitely left the door ajar, and they've had Yogi Breisner down there. But I just don't see what the difference is going in off a run on the flat to off a four. I'd like to see him going in off a clear round over hurdles, and he's not going to have that. And I, to be honest, I don't think he'll... I've thought all along he won't run, and I'll stick with that.
Grant Dunche, the interim BHA chief executive, gave quite an interesting answer to a question about whether they had a view on Constantine Hill running in the Champion Hurdle last week. He said they were maintaining a watching brief and were in contact with Connections. Very much reading between the lines there, it wasn't exactly a resounding endorsement from the regulator in the concept of running Constantine Hill. But I guess that opens up a bigger question. You know, should the regulator be getting involved with, you know, this is a horse who's had three bad falls, very much a pattern rather than one-offs at this stage. You know, should they be getting involved, and should there be some sort of fitness to race process that they can sort of implement at times of this?
I kind of feel you've got to trust the horsemen. They've got to trust the trainers. They've licensed them belief that they're going to do everything in the best interest of the horses in their care. I think, to me, that is enough. We need to trust our horsemen, and we've definitely got to trust Nicky Henderson, who's got more experience than anyone else in the game, almost anyone else in the game. So, yes, by all means, say we're keeping an eye on it, and maybe that is reading between the lines, saying that we are a bit fearful of a PR disaster here, but I don't really want to see personally a governing, the BHA or similar, telling trainers where they can and can't run horses.
Last word for the champion hurdle, not shaping up to be the strongest race ever. Gordon Elliott in today's Cheltenham Festival Stable Tour, exclusive to Racing Post Plus members, was very positive once again with the bright days ahead, his big hope in the race. What do you reckon, Liam? How do you assess that race?
You can make a case for a lot of them, as I mentioned before. I think, given what we've seen from Brighter Days Ahead, I think she has to go for that race. I think it seems like it's becoming more and more likely that Lossiemouth will probably go back to the mares. Obviously, we've got a Willie Mullins stable tour later this week, so we might have a bit more insight from the great man. But there's a lot of certainly British interest. I spoke to Dan Skelton on Saturday at Newbury, and he's really bullish of the new Lions' chances. I was really impressed with how he quickened up to win the Unibet hurdle. Albeit it wasn't a really strong paced race, but I think he's got every chance. And listen, Golden Ace, last year's winner. I mean, she sprung a surprise last year. Skelton himself said that he reckons she's going slightly under the radar. I mean, she might go for the Kingwell on Saturday. So if she turns up, we'll see if she can sort of enhance her claims. But it's another great race at the festival.
Coming up this week on the Racing Post YouTube channel, a treat you don't want to miss, a new limited series called Racing Unfiltered that takes you behind the scenes in Lambourne, the Valley of the Racehorse, showing you the real lives of the racehorses and the people behind them. It'll be on the Racing Post YouTube channel starting this Saturday, Valentine's Day. Don't miss it. Well, thank you very much to both of you for joining us. Lots to discuss this week. Thank you very much to you at home as well for joining us. We're 4 weeks out from the Cheltenham Festival. Constitution Hill is the story that keeps on giving, and British racing is once again in chaos. What will happen next week? Join us to find out in a week's time. Thanks again.